Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Well, welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 595. Today is March 5th, 2025. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle.
I'm one of your hosts, Dustin.
And I'm another host, Adriel. Hope that was cool. The right order.
It works.
They'll never know.
They'll never know.
Cool. Well, good seeing you guys.
Good to see you.
Why don't we get into what we did with guns? And Dustin, you want to start us off?
Sure. I did some things with guns this week, which was great. I actually managed to go to the range not once, but twice, which was cool. So got to shoot a couple of my guns, which was really nice. And I missed shooting. I did a lot of dry fire practice, and I still got to knock some more rust off of my handguns. But shot some 9, shot some 22, shot some 12 gauge, not a whole lot else, because a lot of my stuff is still in the band, not allowed to take out, you know, gun safe. But anyway. But the other cool thing I got to do, I finally got to test out an R9, which after watching Adriel's video, I was really curious because, I mean, don't get me wrong, we don't have Hoth temperatures here. I didn't get to, you know, test it in minus 400 and I didn't get to, like, you know, douse it in ice and snow. But, you know, I still got to give it a good little test. And you're not wrong. That trigger, she be a little heavy. But I dig the metal mags. I dig how it cycles. I dig how it runs. I definitely want one. I probably want two. I like the, you know, the controls, everything about it so much better. Probably going to need to own one for PCC season, you know, in the near future. I don't get to go shoot this next match this month because there's a gun show the same weekend that I'm working, but I definitely need one this year, I think, probably. Hmm. Yeah. Took a buddy with me when I went shooting. He had a good time. They always do. I've been collecting data points. It's hilarious. Every new shooter that I take shooting always falls in love with my GP100, my 38357. I don't know what it is with new shooters, but like the single action trigger on that thing, just everybody seems to essentially, like, it's a laser beam. So that I thought was cool. That's all I did. I guess, you know, embraced for the ban that, you know, was supposed to come last week. Still bracing.
Yeah, they had a temper tantrum because people found out about it beforehand.
Oh no, right? But that's what I did. What about you, Adriel? What'd you do?
Let's see. I did an RPAL course, a private one. So ran that. And then I had a little range visit. Did a little bit of shooting. Where did I shoot? I shot. Oh, yeah. I was sighting in this guy here. It's a Mossberg MVP. It's an air mag fed, and I was sighting it in for this scope because my kid was gonna use it for three gun. I'll talk about that in just a minute. Did a whole bunch of reloading. RCBS sent a bunch of stuff to me, so I was trying it out and testing some of it. So what did I use? Oh, they sent me one of those like a powered trimmer, and I like it. Just a lot faster of a trimmer and a lot easier to get a lot of trimming done.
So is that automated or you got to put pressure on it still?
Automated.
Nice.
You take the case out, you put a case in, and you pull a lever and it just starts chewing away at it.
Beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. I like. So that's very nice. The other thing I got that I was going to work on a little bit here during the show was prepping some brass. RCBS likes to use, they have this like jaw, this like flexi jaw thing. So that they don't use shell holders or anything like that. They just use this flexi jaw thing.
Oh, and, really? They went away from the shell holder?
Yeah. Hmm. You just take your case and just kind of wiggle it and there. In it goes. That's it. Which I kind of like because, yeah, you know, never know when you're going to be working on some of this stuff. So it's kind of nice to be able to not have to use a shell holder.
So that's kind of auto-centering then?
Yeah. Yeah, it just kind of auto-centers it and you just like wobble it in there and off you go. Yeah. Yeah. So that was decent. And then, what else am I up to right now? This weekend coming up, I've got a 3-gun match. And I have set up a couple of belts. I've shown this stuff to you guys before. I just want to show our listeners because it's been a while since I've done like a review of what I'm running. I'm running some odd stuff, I guess. So for my rifle, I'm running my M1 Garand, and I'm glad I had it out for the show because I was looking over, my gas plug was like 2 threads out.
Ooh.
Just sitting there, I'm like, whoa. I had sprayed a bunch of ballast all over the whole thing to keep it from rusting over the winter. And my rear sight was completely crusted over with ballast all. So I wouldn't have been able to see anything.
I want to watch you run a match with that gun.
I've run one before with that gun.
I've never seen it. I want to watch that as an experience.
Okay. I have some footage.
I'm going to have to say that.
Yeah, so that's going to be my rifle. My shotgun's going to be my Browning A5. Why do I like the Browning A5? Because this is a dummy. When you run it dry, you load it, and it auto-loads that shell in.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's fast, right? There's no port loading this thing. You flip it over, and you just start feeding it, and it just goes. And the other thing I like about it is that you can ghost load it, so you can have one round down on the lifter and you can have the bolt kind of run over top of that so that there's one sitting down on the lifter right now. Yeah. So you can have your tube full, your chamber full, and one sitting on the lifter for one extra round, which is kind of nice if you're going to shoot 3-gun, right?
Yeah.
Kind of need to have that kind of thing. What else? Oh, I guess my pistol, right? And for my pistol, I run a CZ Shadow 2 with a big magwell on it because that doesn't do anything for our divisions in IPSC. That might put you out of production, but not in here. There's all my pistol mag pouches there, and then my rifle mag pouches. My buddy Chris made me some Kydex
nice
N-block pouches, so I've got a couple of those on here. I've got a couple that I've got on these ELS clips here. So I've got those that I can pop on there. And then I have my shot shell caddies that I can put over here, or a chest rig if I want to for the shotgun.
So that is so good. Kind of
I do not miss the Canadian 3-gun belts.
Oh, it's so big. It's so bulky, right? For my older boy, he's going to be running Tony's Patriot, which MVP is MVP.
MVP, yeah.
Yeah. It's so light. Right? It's so light. It's like 5 something. Yeah. Nice and light and lightweight. And the big advantage is that AR mags. So for him, he's going to be able to run those coupled mags, and it's going to be less. I was thinking, like, do I put him on the Garand or not? And he'd probably just end up cranking his finger on the Garand. So
does that? And, sorry, I was just going to ask. Does that MVP have the same problem my 308 one does, where it like really the bolt grinds on the top round if it's interesting.
I don't have any issues like that. My boy's gonna be running Gersan MC312. Nice. Kyle tuned, very nice, smooth. Ooh, look how smooth the mirror polish on there. Not like mine. Mine's ragged, and it has been for I don't know, years. And then he's got the Lynx belt because this grew with him. So as he grew, I added Lynx to it. He's going to be running a Jericho for his pistol. Yes. I have a Glock, but the Jericho has a little bit nicer of a trigger and it's heavier, so it soaks up the recoil.
It's a way nicer trigger, excuse me, and absolutely eats recoil. That gun is a beauty. God bless the Israelis for that.
Yeah. And then he's got a full bunch of mags. And the nice thing here, if he needs an extra mag and he forgot to load them, I can just give him one of my mags. Because the Shadow 2 mags work inside the Jericho. His won't work in mine because he's got lips on his magazines. But mine will work in his.
Oh, those are the Mekgar ones.
With the base pad. So right. You need a base pad that doesn't have that lip on there. You can modify a factory mag. You need to chop that front lip off and it'll be fine. But
yeah.
I might as well just have like the nice ones on there, right? Yeah, that's the, and then my third kid, sounds like he's wimping out, so I don't think he's going to come out, but I had a 22 set up for him, but I'm not going to push him. I don't want to push him too much and then have him not like it and, you know, dislike it and whatnot. I want him to want to do it.
Yeah. That is fair.
Yeah. I guess that's it for me. Dustin, is that you now?
No, I already went.
All right.
Kyle. Well.
Sure, I'll go. Unfortunately, I didn't make it to the shotgun qualifier last weekend. Work happened, and yeah, there was a project they really needed help getting back on track. And it's been crazy. So I'm already at like 45 hours for work this week, and the previous 2 weeks were over 150 hours. So...
Is that
did that
is
overtime that, tax that change going
not,
yet?
No, not yet.
Oh,
believe me, if that went through,
you're gonna be laughing though. Oh my god, man!
I can't wait for that to go through because I seem to be putting in a lot of hours.
is this missing that qualifier? Is that gonna affect you long term for your?
No, because I was looking. There's at least four other, and they're taking your best three.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So I just have to make sure that like there's three that are actually pretty easy to get to. And then one, that one's pretty easy too. It's just one that I definitely have to fly for. There's a one or two that I don't even have to take days off, especially with new work schedule. So
nice.
Well, work schedule, we'll call it with the quotations. But yeah, it's door's been constantly going, parts coming. And everything because, well, Craig likes to buy stuff and send it to my house, which I don't mind because I get to play with stuff. I've been buying stuff as well. But yeah, so I've been building guns. One of the parts that I found, sorry, it's going to be all over because there's parts and builds and it's unobtainium, basically. I actually found an Aftec extractor for 2011 in stock.
Mm.
I swear they've stop making these because you can't find them. And for those who aren't familiar on why this is so great, and I talked about it before on why it took me so don't know why it took me so long to actually look into getting one of these. So with the 2011, you end up like everything, like your mags or whatever, you end up having to tune them over time. Well, with the Aftec, instead of you're standing there, sitting there, bending your extractor, reinstall it, make sure it's tight enough on a case, whatever, it's got a little plate in here that goes around the extractor, and then it's got these springs, so when you start getting weak extraction, you replace your springs. And yeah, from what I've heard, this is what you want in a 2011, and I finally found one right after I ordered just a standard replacement because I figured it was about, I think my lip is on my 2011's getting, or on my limited is getting a little worn. It's definitely seen a lot of rounds. I don't know how many, but it's seen a lot because that's still the original one. But so that came in. I'd ordered a wedge leveling, scope leveling kit because next week is Superstition, so I will be heading to Phoenix, and that time is booked off work. Work is not interfering with that.
Good.
And usually work doesn't interfere, but yeah, it was just one of those things. But so if anyone's ever used one of these ever since actually Chris had them at the house last year, and so much better than using a bubble level or whatever to level your scope. And Apex is coming out with them, but they're not out yet, and I figure I could use them next week for all the guns we have to mount optics on and get set up. So it was, I think it was like $15 on Amazon. I live in a town that you can't buy anything, so lots of online ordering. And then my optics from Apex came in. So got my little care package from them. So I got a couple Fusions, which is their competition dot. Nice big window on that. And so that's going to go on my open gun. And I'm thinking probably my PCC. And then I also got an Atom, which will probably, for now, it might go on the wife's gun, or it might go, or the gun that wife uses, or it might be my 45 for my PCC. But it's just a little bit smaller window. If you haven't seen the Apex dots, there's decent size difference. But yeah. And then my scope came in too, of course. And yeah, I'll show that. I was hoping Dustin was going to be here because I ordered a new scope mount. I decided to go all out on scope mounts.
Yeah, you did.
And so I ordered a spur.
Yeah, I see.
So this is the spur SP4026C. From descriptions, it was developed for the Noveski three-gun team. And it's got a super low mount. So it's a 1.26 inch mount. And so super low, super beefy. You can attach everything to this scope mount. It's I read reviews. They're supposed to be good. I actually hadn't heard of them, but when I saw the price, I was like, oh, I'm going to take a little bit closer look at this. And yeah, okay. Got the mount, and in the rings they have grooves, and in the instructions they mention that those grooves are there for gluing your scope in.
What?
Yeah.
Epoxying?
Yep. So it's got a built-in slot for your wedge leveler. They send their own wedge leveler, especially with this one, because 34 more mil tube, and look how low that is.
That is impressive.
You can barely see light between the base and the base of the optic. And for other comparison, because I got Craig's that he was letting me run last year, still on his mount. So he's got the worn mount, the 1.9 inch mount. And so I can, luckily I have full length rail, so I can put it on the rail and hold up, and you can tell the height difference for the scope. So big difference there, like 3/4 of an inch, literally. But what I found, because the mount came in yesterday, and so far I'm really liking the super low mount, because it seems to be pretty much on the same radius as my 45 irons. So I don't know if it's the way I shoot or whatever. The 1.9, I think, was just, it was too tall for me, but it was Craig's setup. I'm not complaining about it, but I always found it had to fight a little bit when I was transitioning from my irons to the scope. So far, super happy. I can just roll the rifle over and my irons are right there. So, nice. So yeah, that spur mount is going to be hard when Apex releases their mount, but we'll talk and we'll see. We'll see how things go. Push for me wanting to run their mount, because I'm really liking this so far, and I haven't even shot it with the mount on. I just dry firing and setting it up. And then I got my brake put on, my new unrivaled brake.
That thing is so cool.
Oh yeah, it looks so good. But so that's my rifle. And then I built Craig's rifle. He's got he ordered some stuff. So he's got JP barrel, same as me, but he's running a 18-inch J JP Barrel, same break. I think his looks... Normally, I don't like this much barrel sticking out the handguard. I like it being nice and tight. But this setup, I think, looks sexy. It looks good. And he ordered this buttstock. I think I might have shown it on the show before, but this is with it on here. But this is an XLR buttstock.
Ooh.
I like it. It's got the same adjustability, if not maybe a little bit more than the Cole components. But it's got like a soft coating on your cheek weld. It does a limb saver butt pad. I mean, it's AR comped and everything. Do you really need that soft of a butt pad? Probably not, but it doesn't hurt. It's just, probably it seems like really
priced too, right?
I'm sure it is. But actually, yeah, it's funny. During the main topic, we were talking about cost of rifles, because I don't know why I keep doing this, but I priced out how on my rifle, on how it is currently set up, I actually priced out what it would cost to build that. If you were to just buy everything that I've got on there right now, how much it would cost, and it was scary.
You shouldn't do that.
No, I shouldn't.
Shouldn't do things like that, Kyle.
Your wife can't hear you.
Well, the lucky thing is, or the great thing is between prize table pulls, stuff I've had for years, and sponsorship stuff, I've only paid for like half the stuff on the gun.
That's fair. That's okay. That's not so bad.
But yeah. I mean, you end up, it's like a $5,000 rifle US.
Don't say things like that out loud, Kyle.
It's whatever.
It's whatever.
Well, that's the thing. Like the barrel I bought in 2018.
Fair.
Yeah, handguard lower. Those were prize table pulls, scopes, sponsors. So I mean, it's like I didn't go out yesterday and spend $5,000 on a bunch of parts to build a rifle.
No.
So and those are today's prices, not you know 5-6 years ago.
No,
but yeah, anyways, did some rebuilt Craig's shotgun because he ordered a bunch of different stuff, new recoil spring, and he put a monotube on it. So these monotubes are interesting because it basically it's a 10 round tube and he shoots in limited. So some matches actually put you on a capacity limitation where it's not just honor system or plugged, it's length of tube. So I think that's why he went this way, because now he can just pull off his extension at one of those matches and run the mono tube. But it replaces your whole tube, rethreads into the receiver. And with that, he's got to run the 10-inch M-Lock handguard. And I mean, he's got the Roth receiver, which is super nice. It's basically an M2, but full custom M2, custom receiver. That the Ethos two-piece shell catch.
It's actually really gorgeous. I got to ask, do you guys call like those competitions? Like, are those Kanakistan competitions? Like, is that the official name for them?
The which?
Kanakistan.
What matches are you talking about?
Oh, your magazine capacity matches, ones where you limit the tube size.
Oh, like, I don't limit. He shoots limited. I don't know why he shoots limited, but he doesn't like magnification in his optic.
I'm more limitations in your magazine capacity.
Yeah, actually that
y'all should call them that.
Yeah, I should. Yeah.
You should.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. There was he got his trigger pack done by Briley as well.
Oh,
but then he bought the ANS reduced power spring kit. We haven't done any of the other springs since. I actually don't know what Briley did with the springs, if they put their own springs in there or kept ours in there or what, but we did replace the safety spring. And so it's that safety clicks really nice. It's hard to tell that on.
No, I can feel it.
Camera. Feel it. Yeah. So, yeah, but
that's Craig's.
Pretty.
And then I added some stuff because I ended up ordering the 45-degree vent rib sight for mine. but because I can run, that's the thing with the monotube, he's got to run the 10-inch handguard. I can run the full 14-inch handguard, which I really like. But I also got the vent, the 45-degree vent rib sight. Nice when you have to go around a barricade or something. Mm-hmm. One thing with these vent rib sights, and I don't know if you could do it another way, especially with utilizing the M-lock, but now maybe I'm just dumb, but I've tried it a few different times and ways. You have to pull this vent rib if you want to separate the handguard from the barrel.
Oh,
because the backs of the M-lock that actually grasp on the underside, they grab on this rib right here at the base of your barrel. So you like when you're putting it together and your handguard is separated, you can't actually slide your barrel down into the handguard with the sight on there. So that's one unfortunate thing, and one I don't know if we could actually remedy. So, but it's only four bolts. You'd loosen up, pull that off. So we'll keep playing with it. And Briley is bound to be at the match. I might ask them about it as well. But yeah.
Cool.
And what else do I have up here? Oh, yeah. I registered for a bunch of matches. We were talking about shotgun matches. I registered, I think, four more of those. Registered for nationals, for multi-gun nationals. And yeah, we're got Superstition next week, so I will be traveling to Phoenix on Monday. All the guys will come in and it'll be get to the house and start building guns and having a great time. Start the match on Friday, so I don't know if I'll be on the show next week. I will see how things are going there, but yeah, not much shooting. I'm gonna go up Saturday morning and zero confirm stuff because I gotta do Craig's shotgun from my shotgun, re-zero my shotgun, tune my brake and whatnot. So yeah, range visit on Saturday is due. And yeah, so that's it for me. And now we will get into upcoming events. Is there many maple seeds coming up on the calendar? Any of them coming up soon?
Nothing's like super scheduled.
No? Okay.
No, we'll be adding some soon.
Yeah, it's getting to the season. Those should be starting to show up.
Yeah, soon.
HGG Firearms Training.ca. Like there's a couple March 22nd, 23rd at Sherwood Park and April 5th, 6th in Devon. And three gun. Chaz has their first three gun match this coming weekend. And.
Spots are still available. Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's early in the season and people don't know what rifle they want to run. Yeah. So
do people have rifles on the ground right now?
Do people have rifles?
Yeah. 22s.
Yes, oh yeah. The Chaz is creating divisions and just bring what you have and you will go out and have a fun time.
Basically. Yeah. That's what our year is going to, I think that's what our year is going to be until, laws change.
Yeah. Fair. So, yeah, so super fun, not serious at all. Just go have a good time. And then the CCFR AGM, that's coming up. And I'm just clicking on the link now so I can get a date, June 28th, 2025. And that is, where is that? That's at Niagara Falls. So yeah, that's coming up. BTSA is having some matches, an 8-stage steel challenge on March 9th. So that's Sunday this week. So if you're down in Calgary area, you can go shoot there. And
a good time.
Yeah, we'll get on to the news. And I don't know who added this. Says not really news, but it's fascinating. The terrifying rise of smart bullets. It's a YouTube video. So I'm going to guess Tony added that one.
Probably.
Yeah.
Not me.
Wasn't me.
So. I like dumb bullets.
Yeah.
Stupid fast.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing that I didn't mention in what we did in guns for the 300 Win Mag. I've decided what bullet and combo I'm going to go with. I'm going with a 165 grain TSX, which is a very light bullet for 300 Win Mag. And I'm going to I'm going to be pushing it stupid fast.
What are you going with? Please tell me like at least 35.
For speed?
Yeah.
No, 3250. Okay. 3250 is the spec with a 24-inch barrel. I got a 26. So maybe like 3300, 3400, somewhere around there.
Okay.
How long is that barrel going to last?
Not long, but how many rounds do you need to fire?
That's fair. Like four a year for your hunting gun. Yeah.
That's a four a year kind of a thing. Just absolutely fair. Obliterate some poor Bambi and miss it.
And then scare off everything else in like a 2 mile radius.
Sorry, what? Huh? No, this is a mandatory hearing protection kind of a rifle.
Yeah.
I know some guys run like their 7 rem mag or 300 win mag with a break, but no, I really don't want to do that either because that's stupid loud.
Yep.
We'll get on with more. Apparently, there was a Quebec man sentenced to 5 years for anti-Semitic comments and 3D printing guns.
I think it was primarily for the 3D printing guns.
I would guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess they turned over a sample of his DNA and had banned him from possessing weapons for 10 years. We all know how well that works.
He'll have a gun tomorrow.
Yeah.
He was already making himself some.
Oh.
In prison.
In
prison.
He'll probably make himself a zip gun in prison. And then when he gets out of prison in a year, because there's no way he'll do all 5 of those years, I'm sure he'll be upset with the government that screwed him over, and he'll be making, you know, guns for anybody that wants one.
Yeah.
This is our system.
Yeah. And there was an interesting post from today that Tracy highlighted, and it's just, it's irony at its finest. I guess there was a little.
Wait. What is it? It's not irony. It's, well, say it with me. Come on. Hypocrisy. It's hypocrisy. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So Catherine McKenna, she did a tweet. We must be prepared to defend our sovereignty, not just with military spending, but with a population that is engaged, trained, and ready. Great piece by Peter McLeod about how Canada needs a civil defense force where every Canadian has a role to play. You know, like that demonized 3-gun, those war games that you play, and you're just...
Yeah. The DCRA, the government was involved with setting up a lot of these marksmanship programs and funded them.
Yes.
Because it's a cheap way to keep a ready civilian population.
I would still like to know what Canadians are supposed to use for this civil defense force.
Well, we've been told that there are going to be lots and lots of options on the civilian market still. They only banned a small collective of the worst assault style rifles, and it's totally okay. I would love to see Catherine McKenna on the front line. I want to see her on spearheading. I want to see her tip of the spear, kind of like, I really want to see her become the weapon.
From Red Dawn. She'll be one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see some action behind the words.
A lot of people talking tough right now. A lot of people saying Canada should be doing peacekeeping missions in Ukraine. It's like, you go.
Really?
Yeah. I can't. Okay. You know,
yeah. I'm not going on. And
I could never do that, but we should. No, you should.
Yeah.
You want to talk tough? You want to talk tough about going to Ukraine? You can go. You can volunteer right now. I bet you they'll still take you.
Happily. They're dragging.
They'll put you in the meat grinder.
They're taking people whether they like it or not right now.
Well, that's been great. I've been seeing people post links to the Ukraine Foreign Legion on these liberals and that. They're like, oh, here's a link to the Ukraine Foreign Legion. There you go.
Next job for Justin Trudeau. He's going to be out of work soon. He'll be looking for a paycheck.
Yeah. Send he can go with the shipment of little 22s that they were going to send over.
I will send him with my GSG 16. He can have it. but he's got to use it on the front line.
We're getting pretty borderline here, so let's get into new gun stuff. And Adriel, do you want to take us through the new gun stuff this week?
You bet I do. Let's share that screen. Okay. Tenda's brought in a bunch of new Norinco rimfire rifles, some of which are exciting, some of which are not. I'm showing the first one, which is not exciting to me. It's their NR-15. They had a couple of versions like this. It's a basic bolty 22. One thing I will take note of is, look at that safety. What in the F is going on there? What did they copy? What did they copy to make this? I know they copied it. I don't know what they copied, though. Is it a rotating safety?
I think you should buy one. Safety. You should buy one, do a review on it, and let us know. Yeah, no, but then we'll know. Then the public will know if you do a review on it.
Do you know what I really want to get? This one. The JW25 Mini Mauser. Now, not at that price. I won't wait for it to go on sale.
What's the price?
$439?
Oh, yeah, no, too much.
Yeah, it's too much. I can get a Mauser, not an unsporterized one. I can get a sporterized Mauser, real Mauser, for less. So that's a bit too much for that. But yeah, maybe once they go on sale.
On sale, that would be a fun little toy to have for sure.
I think so. Looks like a little Mauser. Look at that. 25, 50, 75, 100.
Nice.
You got all the, you're set.
Yeah. Oh, that's where they copied that safety
definitely.
From.
Now we know.
Speaking of Mausers, SFRC has a whole bunch of sporterized Zastava Mausers in 8mm Mauser, and I don't know if they had anything else, right around the $500 mark. So these are sporterized. They're not your full military wood and all that kind of stuff, but they're still Mausers. And some of them are very cheap. Some of them are down to $299, depending on, condition and all that kind of stuff. Woodstock broke behind receiver and repair has been attempted.
Mm-hmm. Attempted.
Look at the attempt.
An attempt.
Interesting. That's an interesting, very unique. You will have the only rifle like that.
Yeah.
Maple Ridge Army has released their MRA Rock Solid Muzzle Brake in 45, so 458 cal, so big old chunk of steel. If you want to fit it to a 4570 Henry, for example, and have lots of flames going out there.
Mine's not threaded.
You can always thread it. Stair Scout. So I didn't know that the Stair Scout 2 was out, but apparently it is. FOC has it, and everyone else is, I tried to find, sold out. So I don't know what the 2 has versus the 1, but there you go. $2,900. There is also Art Tech. So JR was talking about this European SHOT Show, and that's where this was shown. So Art Tech has a lever action 223 and 308. The 223 tactical version uses AR mags for $599 MSRP. And then they also have a 308 version that has, it doesn't take AR mags. It takes shorter little mags, more flush fit.
I would actually love to see that come to our market. I am the market. That
you would.
I would.
Neat, I guess.
It's different.
Hey, you want something different? Cabela's has the Heritage Rough Rider Rancher carbine rifle on sale.
That is different.
Why show this to me?
Hey, it's a revolver rifle. You know, I've been looking at them too. I'm like, $469. Jesus, not that much.
That same thought has crossed my head a couple of times.
I wonder how many views I could get on a video if I did of that. I can't use it as my excuse. I'm going to use it in the PAL course, though, because this is not an action covered. And I'm pretty sure they have a test in the written where it's like, what kind of action isn't found in rifle? And it's like revolver.
it would be a fun little camping gun, though. You know, like a fun little plinking when you're out camping kind of gun.
It's probably lightweight.
I bet.
4.1 pounds.
Yep. I know it's dumb. I want it.
Yeah.
It would be cool.
Okay. Well, we'll find out shortly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, yeah, that's a good idea. You buy one, do a review on it, and then when you're looking for like a secondary market to get like 80% of its value, I know someone who would be interested.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have it added to my cart, and we'll see what happens after the show.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Probably check out
as well. Yeah, I suspect. Yeah.
I think that's all the gun stuff I had on here. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all of it.
We'll get into our main topic.
All right. Welcome to the show, J.R. Cox. J.R., welcome.
Hey, welcome, guys.
So maybe just to get us started off, why don't you introduce yourself, let us know about what businesses you have and what you've got going on in the Canadian firearms community.
Okay. Well, now I'm down one because I shut down the Shooting Edge for strong financial reasons in October. So I'm down with, I've got Target Sports in Toronto, which is a great indoor shooting range. Doing a lot of changes out there, a lot of innovation this year. So the members out there will be happy because we're changing target retrieval systems and doing a bunch of things. But I think what we're really here to talk about is Sterling Arms International, which is my Canadian manufacturing, as opposed to William Evans, which is my British manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So the Sterling Arms brand is something that I started up, reinvigorated with James Edmonston. The Edmonston family are the original Sterling company from the UK. So, you know, the machine guns that we all knew, the sub guns, that's all Sterling company, Sterling Arms company. And so we started working on a few things together. And then he wants to take his Sterling company strictly military police, and I want to go more commercial. So that's when we kind of divided it up and say, well, I'm going to go Sterling Arms International. He's going to stay Sterling company. But like I'm going to the UK in a week and we're having dinner and going through some stuff. Like it's really a labor of love for both of us. And it's a great brand. It's a good storied historical brand. And I'm glad to be part of it because it was a very innovative company from in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And so I like to think that we're trying to bring that along now and continue with that tradition. And so in the Sterling, we formed it about 5 years ago. We've had a number of firearms we've introduced to the market and then they get banned. So we had the TSR and the 102, those got banned. The R18 Mark II, that got banned. And just recently the R18 Mark III got banned. So right now, the only gun that we have on the market that didn't get banned is the R9 Mark I.
Yeah, exactly. That's the your guys' PCC that you brought in. That's been kind of making the rounds, getting out there these days.
Well, we're pretty happy with it. So we were working on the R18 Mark III with a Turkish company for about a year and a half. We took our IP there, but the biggest complaints with the Mark II to us was it was too heavy and it was expensive because our rifle was $2,800 and it weighed 8.5 pounds. So, yeah. I mean, it was heavy, but it worked. We never replaced a gas part under warranty. So we never broke a piston. We had to replace one gas block, not block, there's a plug, like a linkage. And they ran the gun in Langley, BC at the range there for about 3,000 rounds before when they had to clean it, they realized that they'd broken it. Because it was an integral part, like there's a little dimple on it that sheared off. So we just gave them a new one, but the gun never came out of that. Like they still used it on the range with that broken part until we sent them a new one.
Amazing.
So I'm quite happy. We've never actually had to replace a gas part to keep the gun from firing. And we had some R18 Mark IIs that had close to 100,000 rounds to them. We've replaced the barrel. We've had to replace the bolt. You know, they're like an AR-15 bolt. So there's a lot of stress on the lugs, springs, pins. But the guns, the basic gun kept working. So we build high round count guns. That's my whole thing is I want to build high round count guns. Like you should be able to beat the crap out of them. They should still work. Like you shouldn't get a PCC and have to put two or 300 rounds through it before it's reliable. You should put a box, load the mags, make sure it's oiled up. And even that's kind of skeptical, and then go shoot it. Like that's how it should work.
Yeah. You know, like completely agree.
Yeah. Like that's a grown up gun company should do that. And I think we've done that. So we were working with this Turkish company to get our Mark III. So it's 80-85% our IP and about 15% their IP. But while we're working on this, they had a 9mm and we were just kind of tinkering with that on the side. And we're going to dip our toes kind of into the PCC market. But then they banned our Mark III. And I wish I had a picture, but we have 600 of those rifles built.
Oh.
So we built 600 rifles, and we were going to launch them on the 10th of December.
Yep.
So that dealers could have them in time for the Christmas. And so let's just say JR had a very sad panda face on the 6th of December. When you think about all of the capital that I had tied up in 600 or 580 completed R18 Mark IIIs.
Ready to go. You had 600 guns ready to go to market 4 days before the ban. That's brutal.
Yeah. So it was pretty disappointing because, you know, this whole, you know, buyback or compensation scheme, they still haven't listed any of the R18s on the list for the buyback. And I hate these word buyback for the confiscation compensation program.
Yeah.
And so it's brutal. But we were kind of tinkering with the R9, so we're like, damn, let's get this thing to market because it didn't get banned. Because we're lucky because we'd submit it for an FRT, but they'd come back and wanted a physical sample, and we hadn't sent them one yet. So because of that, there's no FRT. And then if you don't send them a sample within like 60 days, your application dies. So we let the application die. So there's nothing in the pipeline for an FRT for the R9.
Yep.
That's great.
So we're lucky with that. And so we're just lucky that they didn't give it an FRT because sure as shit, it'd be on that list.
Oh, 100%.
I'd be with no guns in the market.
Yeah.
So here we are standing like when the last, one of the last PCCs. And, I think it's just like the crypto, like because there's no FRT and the liberals ban things using the FRT, we're kind of in limbo. We get caught in this. It works for our benefit finally, to keep this rifle, you know, on the market.
Exactly. No, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Dustin.
No, I was going to say that it ended up really working in favor. It's kind of funny, but it's also been really, really nice that there are just at least a couple of little things out there. And knowing, like, I'm sure that the sale of this rifle probably isn't hurting when you're sitting on, I can only imagine, the price tag for the stock that you're waiting and hoping that one day you will be able to sell to, right?
Oh, I agree. So we had to pivot. So then on the 6th of December or 7th of December, we issued, I know, 15 POs for parts. So we're like, okay, how quick can we gear up? But the thing is, it's also a cash flow issue too, because I had, you know, $450,000 or $500,000 worth of inventory now. You know, I plan to get that money back out by selling it to dealers.
Yep.
So the issue now is what can we afford to do and what can we do to get these R9s going? So we managed to cobble about 100 guns together over the last month. And now we're gearing up. So hopefully by the second, third week of March, we'll have enough parts coming in. So we should be able to start shipping about 200 guns in the month of March, and then up to 300 guns in the month of April, and so on. So we can gear up.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think at the price point, we managed to come with this gun out. And so far, like the range, like, so when we got the rifles, we're building them. The first rifles we sent out were to ranges. So we contacted ranges and said, do you want a couple of rifles for your range? And So we gave them a deal on it, and we'll also give them a 6-month bumper to bumper. Like, doesn't matter what they break on that gun, we're going to fix it. If nice. They wear it out, trash it, we'll replace it. Because having run ranges, I know that with all these bands, I mean, you're just running out of things to run to generate revenue.
Yep.
So we knew that the ranges were hit the hardest on this. But also, I mean, it's not just altruistic. It's like from a commercial standpoint, by getting the ranges using these guns, all of a sudden now we're getting all this information because, well, we did all our testing. When you start getting like 8 commercial ranges all using these things and putting like a couple thousand rounds through them a weekend,
yeah,
if not more, and we call them like we get on Monday. So how many rounds and what did, you know, anything break? Any good, you know, issues, plus, minus, good, bad, ugly? How are they holding up? Any problems with the finish? It gives us great feedback.
Yeah, that's great.
It's fantastic. So we can make little tweaks to the design as we go, and not have to wait. Like, we don't have to do any major revisions. And so far, I gotta say, like, we've had very little issues. The biggest thing right now is teaching people that with a double stack, double feed magazine, you know, it's just like your AR. You got, when you put the rounds in, you got to tap the spine to make sure you seat all the rounds to the back. Otherwise, you can get some weird feeding. So when the ranges realize that, and we explain that to them and show them a little video, like old school, you know, like tap it. Almost all the stoppages all went away.
Got to tap it on your helmet, right? Do the old
tap up here. But that's exactly it.
I have to pump your guys' tires a little bit. I love the mag selection a lot. I love a good metal mag, and there aren't enough good metal mags in the PCC market. And I think your decision to pick that magazine was spectacular.
Thank you. The reason behind it, for one thing, it's easy to get those mags in Turkey.
Oh,
right? because they make the MKE made the about a million mags for the Turkish government. So I went to MKE and said, "Hey, can we buy these mags from you?" And they're like, "Oh, absolutely." So getting the mags isn't that hard. In fact, they've done new tooling for me because their tooling was pretty old, and we found that when they were stamping our mags, there was a little bit of variation. So we actually had to almost test every mag. So they've redone their tooling because we've ordered so many magazines that I checked the last batch, and they're going to come in, and they're very consistent now. So I'm really happy with that. They're going to be more consistent. And, you know, $70 a mag for a steel mag, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Now, in this market today, like, you know, everything's inflated.
Yeah, but also, too, it's like you want to buy a CZ mag, and they're made by Metgar. They're $110.
Yep.
Bucks.
Yep.
Right? Like, so, like, is it punchy? Like, when you think about it, like, you know, like, that $70 is chunky because you can buy, you know, a cheap Glock knockoff mag for $30. So it's twice the money. But the metal mags will last a lot longer. And that's what I like. For me, that's about it. The last round hold open that we have on ours, we've modified the mags. So yep. In the follower, there's if you take a look, like on the back, I don't know if you can tell, like there's a pin. So unlike regular MP5 mags, right, they don't have a last round, but we have the last round catch. So it's even like an MP5 mag will fit it, but you won't get the last round catch. Our mags will fit into an MP5, but you don't get the last round catch because their bolts are different. Right. So I like what we've done with the mag, and I think we're bringing in like 5 magazines for every rifle. So
right.
So we're going to make sure that dealers can have access to a large amount of mags.
Right? Are you?
Because nothing's worse than you buy a rifle and you can't get magazines.
Yeah, that's that's kind of like the whole frustration for most folks with a new rifle platform that doesn't take Glock mags is the availability of the mags. And I know even from your Adriel's little interview with you guys, like that seemed to be a thing. I real quick, I'm just wondering, are you at all going to look at like bringing in any like 530 mags, like, you know, limited five round 30 round mags.
Oh, the long pin fives.
Yeah,
I haven't really thought about it because it's a pain in the ass to limit them.
Right.
So having more varieties of magazines adds to cost.
So I just have to wait until we get a new government and we ditch magazine capacity restrictions to get my 30 round mags.
Well, no, yeah. you can get the 1030s, Dustin.
Oh,
yeah. You haven't seen the 1030s?
No, I haven't seen the 1030s. Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. No, that has satisfied all my needs. That's perfect.
Yeah, and it's even marked. You know, SAI model R9 Mark I pistol magazine, 9mm NATO, 10 round capacity. So
excellent.
So it's I can almost make it up there. See, there you go.
Beautiful. It says pistol on it.
Yeah.
That's a pistol magazine. Yeah, I saw one.
Well, what we did is we searched, and there is about 20 MP5 variant pistols in the FRT system.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, there's a ton of pistols in the system. So it's not that there is no pistols, you know. And yeah, the way the law reads about readily available, blah, blah, but with the pistol transfer ban, no pistol is readily available. So it's as readily available as every other pistol.
There.
So it depends on what side of the sword you look at it, you know. so we've talked to legal counsel, and it's like, well, it's as available as every other pistol. So it's it meets the definition of the law.
Love that.
So yeah, so we've got pistol mags, and that's it. But they ship every rifle ships with a 5-round rifle magazine.
Right, for.
Because we're selling rifles.
Yes.
But dealers have access to pistol magazines to stock them. Because Sterling will never sell direct to consumer. Sterling's a manufacturer.
Right.
And nothing, as a dealer, nothing pisses me off more than when as a dealer, I'm having to deal with the manufacturer who also sells their wares on their website.
Direct to the consumer.
Yeah. You know, especially the firearms, because there's so low margin. Like there's not a lot of money in guns. So, you know, you can't compete with that because they can do whatever they want. And often they'll put bundles together and do all kinds of shit that just makes it impossible to compete. So Sterling, we're working on developing our dealer network, and we will support the dealer network strongly.
That's what we need.
When my Calgary store put the Sterlings on sale without permission, they almost got cut off. Yeah, they got a blast of shit. And it's basically, if they did it again, they wouldn't get any more Sterlings because I'm not gonna have my store screwed up for my 20 dealers. Right, so those 20 dealers sell way more guns than my one store. So I'll cut my one store off first. before I let them ruin a good thing for me.
That's fair. I also appreciate that. Like, obviously we're trying to showcase, you know, Canadian firearms companies as a whole, and you know better than most that dealers are suffering, you know, more than anyone right now, right? Like, so just the availability of having something on the market that they can sell is a big enough deal, and the fact that you're respecting that, I think, is huge.
Dealers are getting kicked in the balls every week. You know, and then now with the tariffs coming in, I mean, the problem really stems too is all the people that go shop at Cabela's and Bass Pro every day, all day, and don't try even for a second to see if their local gun store has it. Like even a quick precursor online to see if they have it. And so they don't give their Canadian dealers a chance, and they just go and they buy it at Bass Pro, Cabela's, the big American boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do they do? Like, especially like Cabela's used to do a lot of things for the shooting community in Canada. Like, they used to donate a lot of things. They used to give a lot of prizes, things. But then they've said they stopped. The stores still want to, but they're not allowed to. So I don't blame the stores in Canada. But corporate head office says no. They've got the things that they want to do specifically, and that's only what they're allowed to support. So they don't even, it's not like they're sponsoring ladies shoots and they're not doing anything else, but all the local gun stores are, they're the ones giving prizes. They're the ones sponsoring stages. They're the ones hosting matches. And if the shooting community really got behind their local gun stores, and sometimes it means paying a little more money, we'll have a few more survive. Because I can't remember what the stat was, but in 2024, between 2020 and 2024, I think we've lost 40% of the gun stores in the country, and we've lost 25% of the ranges.
You know? Yeah, you notice it in the small towns and that kind of thing, because all those small town gun stores are going belly up, ones that have been around for a million years. I've been noticing them in like rural Alberta.
Yeah. Well, even you know, I am a purveyor of many a small gun store. I love that. And one of my little favorites out in the valley, it's like the only reason they're still in existence is because like the owners want to be, but they're, you know, literal definition of a mom and pop shop. And the only reason they're still operating is like, yeah, like if we needed this business to make us money, we would be shutting it down. But, you know, we're just selling kind of what we can, and you know, they're retired and just kind of doing it as a thing to do, but makes me sad. Shout out to Gun Fishing. I love you guys.
But, well, they probably own the building. They own the inventory.
Yeah.
Right. They own their building. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is the shooting edge. My rent from COVID to now went up from 61,000 to 105,000 a month.
That's like bananas.
$1.3 million a year. And they went like insane.
That's like, bananas.
There's just no way to make it work. Yeah.
How I've been so curious about that. Like, is buying and or building a building like so much more unattainable than paying like $1 million in rent? Like, what?
Well, it comes down to when a lot of us start these businesses, we don't have two pennies to fucking rub together.
Right.
So it's like when I open the Shooting Edge, I can afford to open the Shooting Edge or take money and buy a building.
Right. You can't
not buy a building and own the Shooting Edge. Yeah. So that's the issue is when you start these businesses, you can't afford to do both.
Yeah.
And so you get locked in. And then once you're locked in, I mean, when you build a shooting range, the amount of infrastructure you put into a building, like if I was going to start it now, I was just laughing with my staff today. Cause we were laughing about what things cost. And so in 2001, when I built the Shooting Edge, I built the whole range. I was operational for under $300,000.
Wow.
And to build that place now would cost probably about $2 million. Now, things are fancier now. So back when I built it, there was no such thing as like electronic target retrieval systems. So we built them. In fact, I used garage door openers. So I went to Home Depot, I bought garage door openers, and then we made a little, you know, just a relay to a switch so we could go from to low voltage to move it back and forth. Like that was our high tech. We used aircraft wire and coat hangers. We bought coat hangers in bulk with the clips to hold the targets.
Amazing.
But that's what we could afford.
Yeah.
You know? So we had to design this. We were the first guys in the world to use bulletproof glass in the dividers. Because before that, they were all solid. And we put the bulletproof glass. I said, I wanted people to see in my range office, we see what's going on. And now that's the norm. Everybody does it.
Yep.
Like it's, if you didn't have that, people think you're weird. But when I did it, I had to fight the CFO because they said it would be unsafe. I'm like, it's level 4 ballistic glass. It's safer than steel because you get no spall.
Yep. Right?
Somebody shoots
not in the template.
Glass.
Not in the template.
Exactly. The worst thing that happens is somebody next to you pees their pants. Like, that's it. Ontario CFO was adamant that I couldn't do it. I did it anyway. they kept pointing at the book saying, this is the range build book. This is range guidelines. You know, guidelines. It's not the Bible. And to think about it, like, on how range manufacturing and building has changed so much in 20 years. Like it's incredible. Ranges are so much better than they used to be because there wasn't a lot of commercial ranges in the US until like probably the last 10, 15 years. Like they kind of saw the resurgence kind of the time that we started getting there. Like, so before that, if there was a target retrieval system, it was built for the police or the military. Right. It wasn't for commercial ranges. It wasn't designed around commercial use. And commercial use is actually harder than on a than military and law enforcement.
Yeah,
because they have their course of fire. Target goes to 25 meters, then goes to 20, 20, 15, 10. Like, or, you know, it's very, you know, very predictable. They're only using 8 hours a day max, like these kinds of things. Commercial ranges, man, we just beat the crap out of our stuff because there's so many users.
And the users aren't expected to, like, in when they're doing those course of fires for the police, you got to put all your bullets in within this part of the circle, whereas some of the guys you might have in a commercial range, their accuracy is not going to be that level.
No, but to be quite honest, it wasn't the walk-in traffic guys that shot the targets up, like shot their stuff up. It's people with licenses. Mm-hmm. Honestly, we have very few problems with the people who just did the walk-ins because they were respectful and they were listening to the rules and they wanted to follow your direction. But you get people who have like 10, 15 years of firearms ownership. Man, them bitches be dumb. It's like they forget that guns kill people. Right? Yep. They just get so lackadaisical in their firearm safety. And you just want to slap them the side of the head and say, stop it. Like, yeah, stop
complacency.
It.
I see it
your,
in my palate.
Your mother is disappointed in you.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe tell us a little bit more about the R9. So we've got the R9. It's out there. It's selling like crazy. What do you got coming up next for it?
Well, so we got the R9. When we get a government change and they pull the OICs, then we'll submit for the FRT. So we have a 10.5-inch, and it's uber sexy. It really is.
That's what I want.
It's super sexy. So because of how we did the barrel by counterboring to 10.5 inches, we had the same pressure curve for our non-restricted as our restricted. So we didn't have to worry, like once we didn't have to worry then once we tuned the gun about a different pressure curve to operate the firearm. So it actually works out quite well the way we've done it. Like, and it makes our barrel build a lot easier. But
well, I mean, you look at the back pressure that a lot of the PCCs that we have in Canada here, they're guns that aren't made to have 18.5-inch barrels that now have 18.5-inch barrels, and they've got all that back pressure. So yeah, I do like how you guys, and I mean the I don't know if you'd call it counterboard, but that style of barrel. Like TACOM in the U.S. is doing that for Ruger PC carbine barrels and some other stuff. Like that's becoming popular for competition is counterboring the barrel so that it's nice and light and you're still meeting that 16 inches in the U.S.
Yeah. And for us having to do 18.6, because when you fire your 9mm cartridge, by 10.5 inches, you've hit max peak mass velocity. So all you get after that is friction and whip. Like lots of barrel movement. Like it's incredible. I mean, that's why B&T on their 18.6s put a big monster plastic piece at the end and screwed it in to stabilize the barrel because you're getting so much movement. So by us limiting the actual movement to 10.5 inches, like we've gotten rid of most of that movement. Right. So it's actually quite helping. And the way we counterboard it and then the slits we did, it works quite effective as a muzzle brake. Like, you know, it wasn't really purpose built for that, but it works really well. Like, so I've had some criticism because you can't put a different, brake on it. If one thing it's 9mm, goddammit. Like, come on. Like what do you want to do with the gas? It's 9mm.
I don't think it needs one. Like I had someone comment that on one of my videos and just, I don't see the point. Like, for some of the ones that have a threaded muzzle, I'll put a brake on it, but it's not doing very much. It looks cool. That's about it.
It's not doing anything, but it's adding more whip because you get more weight out there, it's just going to get that. So by what we've done is now we have a predictable, consistent firing rifle. Like the PCC is consistent and our bolt weighs about 1.5 pounds. So it's over 0.5 pound heavier than anybody else's bolt.
Which is fantastic. Yeah,
it is. But Tristan was working on his loads for the World Cup and he was down to like 2.1 grains. He can get a he can get that thing to function with a 700 feet per second 9mm.
Hmm. Wow.
So it may have a heavy bolt, but it's still quite functional at lower velocities. Like you don't need to put a fast round through it, right? So I think that's really important. When we talk about the, and I think we built a really safe gun as well. Like what I like a couple of features. One feature I like that people really have is if you can't really see it very well, or look at my camera, but if you look at the, there it is. People don't realize it, that at the back, we've actually got a buffer built in. So if your firearm, and say you double load your 9mm, you're doing hand loads, and your carrier comes all the way back, your bolt, it won't smack the aluminum, it'll smack steel.
Oh, that's clever. Right?
So, and it's just a simple little, like there's a little spring under there. And
yeah.
So it's really straightforward. So that's one thing. So that's because we know that a lot of PCC shooters will use hand loads.
Yep.
And if they double charge their 9mm, like that bolt's coming back hard. And so we don't want them to wreck the gun.
Right.
Right. So if they whack the back and they whack that steel, well, a replacement of that steel and spring is about $20, you know, as opposed to having to replace their lower. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I love is that we have a firing pin, like a safety. So basically the gun can't fire out a battery.
Love that.
That's another problem. That a lot of the other ones don't have.
Yep.
Yeah. The higher end ones do. But we want to make sure that was incorporated. And that came from a shotgun design.
Oh.
Yeah. And I just said, hey, can you put that in your gun? Like, can you use something like that? Like in this? And they're like, yeah. And they drew it up. And so next thing you know, we got a firing pin safety. And it's really straightforward. It's just there's a screw that we put in the side of the upper receiver. It's rounded. And then when the bolt comes back, there's a slot. And there's just a rocker. And if it doesn't come back all the way and basically push that lever in, that comes in, boop, then it keeps the hammer from hitting the firing pin. So it's really easy, very straightforward, just simple mechanical stop, but it will protect the firing pin from being hit. So we don't have it firing on a battery. And I think that's super important.
That's going to be huge. Like, I'm just thinking about all of the PCCs that were on the market and how many of them had an out of battery problem. You know,
yeah.
Well, the FX9 would.
The FX9. Like,
I had that happen on the FX9. If you ran aluminum cases, it was like the action was too violent because it's got an 18.5-inch barrel, rips case in half, leaves half of an aluminum case in there. And then when that next round comes in, it can't go into the battery, still lets you fire it.
Yeah.
And I had that happen to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't so bad, but it was not what you want to have happen with your gun.
And it can be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you can get sympathetic detonations in the magazine. Like there's all kinds of things that could happen. So we don't want it to happen. And so, well, I don't think you can ever completely eliminate it. I think by having a basic firing pin safety will eliminate, 99% of the chances of it happening.
Yeah.
So I think those are the kinds of things. I think we brought to market an innovative gun. Like it's not a gun. It's not a rifle like a PCC that's just to fill the need because it's the last one standing.
No.
I'm really glad about that.
I think I truly, I do feel like obviously there's still some iteration. This is, it's first generation, but like you're saying, I think this is going to be a thing that regardless of when we get a new government, when we get some fixing of some of these ridiculous laws and bans, I think this gun is going to last. I think we're going to see them in more competitions. I know that's going to be a thing that we're going to see more people shooting this.
I feel quite confident, especially Trump's not going to pull the tariffs anytime soon. Like
no.
He loves this. Like he's just having a good old time. So, Canada gets 60 or 65% of all of its firearms and ammunition from the U.S. Well, it did up until today. I saw a number of our suppliers in Germany talking to a number of European sources to get more supplies because basically, European ammunition was about 10% higher than American by the time you landed it and got everything. And so now with a 25% tariff, we're going to be fine. Like, we can bring in European supplies. And you know, we can replace most of the American stuff. Like, it sucks, but we can.
On ammo especially.
And I looked at a lot of interesting firearms when I was in Europe. And once the laws change, there's a lot of cool shit that can come in.
I'm excited. You know, like,
So I am too. Like, there's lots of things. So I was talking to a number of manufacturers because I bring in stuff, not just Sterling. I'm looking at all kinds of stuff. Like I just want to be able to supply all kinds of cool shit to the market. Like, we're right now, I haven't stopped working. Like, we've redesigned our TSR and our 102. So we want to have new receiver sets and rifles ready for market when the OICs get pulled. Like, we can't wait until they get pulled to start that work. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're already starting on those kinds of things, so that we can be ready with more modern. Because when you think about it, like, our guns were banned in 2020, and people's expectations about what they want and what they, you know, and also modernization of firearms. There's been a lot of advances in the last 5 years. So we want to make sure we have those in our designs when the OICs get pulled.
They're not working out on your back foot.
Yeah. And also, you know, that's what we want to have. And I think that the R9 shows, like, we went from the Mark II, the R18. We'll have the Mark III. So we're using this time saying, you know what? We had these guns. There was a couple of things we wanted to do to them that we didn't quite do. So screw it. We're making some more changes because if we've got a few more months, we've got months now, then we might as well make the best gun we can. Because even the R18, I think we'll still have legs. The Mark III, again, in a post-OIC world, because it's still a short stroke piston, adjustable gas block. We're putting an adjustable gas block in it. It's contained, like, it's more of an MCX style. That's not MCX pricing. Yeah. Because it's still going to be like $1,800. So an $1,800 non-restricted 5.56, you know, that's a good quality, has legs. Updated TSR with ambi everything, and all, we got all kinds of stuff coming in. Again, we want to really have that market. I want Sterling to almost own it. Like, we'll be the ones to be displaced, because I want to put a really good set of, like, suite of firearms on the market, you know, at reasonable prices. Like, you know, and then if the tariffs are in place, no matter what they are, it just makes our stuff that much more competitive.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. I'm just curious real quick. My one question, sure. What, if you could, like, pick two or three things that you would love to bring to the market that maybe you saw that was cool, or things that you're working on, like, what, like, three new things that you'd be interested in if, you know, we wave our magic wand a couple months and Pierre fixes it all, maybe, you know, changes some things, makes some things better.
There's some really, really cool handgun manufacturers. Even some of the Turkish I looked at, that they've come a long way. And they'll give us some incredible options.
Awesome.
Right? Incredible options. That's one thing. I also looked at, there's this Czech manufacturer of handguns. I looked at it at IWA. It is the prettiest handgun I've seen in my entire life. And it's only that the dealer, it's going to retail for like $15,000. Oh. It can only make 200 pistols a year. Mm-hmm. But it's just like that in Canada. I mean, how many Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Bentleys do they sell? There's still a market. I mean, it's a small market. But the thing is, when you see these things and it's so gorgeous, like, you look at the lines of a lot of vehicles, they take it from a Ferrari. They go, okay, this is the new Ferrari. And then those lines work their way down through fashion into the, you know, regular commercial guns. So by pushing the envelope with design and, like, this pistol, it's everything that aliens said they wanted to be, but didn't quite get there. I was just like, I saw this pistol, I walked by and I went, and their tagline is, it's the only handgun ever built with a soul. And I walked by and I stopped and went, what is, like, what is that? Like, I had to go in the booth. Like, it just grabbed your, you're like, that is gorgeous. It was absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And there's a lot of things I don't want to talk about. We have a lot of things coming the pipe, but it's kind of like, I don't want to tip my hands.
Oh, you don't have to tip your hand to anything that you guys are bringing in, but even just like, you know, some, give me like two other cool things that would be cool to see that you could see a potential for in a Canadian market with a friendlier government and some maybe different laws.
There's really cool ELR, like extreme long range rigs out there. Okay. So they would give you more, like you wouldn't have to go custom rifle, right? So you could get into the 1 mile or 2 mile shooting and not spend a fortune. Don't shoot
it. And not mess around with it yourself, right? Have someone else that actually builds it for you.
Yeah. And they put a gun together that'll shoot what you need it to do.
Right.
And also the optics, like there's some great optics out there. I mean, I love Apex and they've come with some cool things. Like I can't wait to get their new prism, 1-4 prism on my restricted R9. Like that little it's such a sweet little package. But there's some really cool shit out there. Like that, even when we get the ARs on the market, like there's like, yeah, the HK, but the HK is 4,000 US.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I went through it and I was like, is this worth $4,000? And I looked at the features and the benefits. And I'm like, it really doesn't have a lot. Like when you think about it, like there's a big difference. Like when I look at AR-15s, there's like in the US, there's like $600 ARs. And they say, well, they're just as good as the $2,000 ARs. And it's like, no, they're not. They're absolutely not. They've had to make so many compromises that they're not. Yes, they will work, but if you get one gun for the Boog, right, and you get no parts, you don't want the $600 AR.
But a $2,000 AR, what is the difference between a $2,000 AR and a $4,000 or $5,000 AR? And again,
thing. Yeah. So in the UK, I have a business called William Evans.
Okay.
And it's right on St. James's Street, right in the heart of London. That's the flagship store. And then I have one in Bisley. And shotguns there start at about, like in our store, in the London store, probably at about 6,000 or 7,000 Canadian. That's where we start at. At the Bisley, it's maybe about 3,000 or 4,000. But already you can see. And we sell a lot of $20,000 shotguns, right? And people say that, well, it's this, it's no better than a Silver Pigeon. It's like, it isn't, but it is. And you have to look at the fit and finish. You look at the engraving, you look at the wood, right? You look at some of these things, the things that make it slightly better. Like, is a Aston Martin that much better than a Corvette for 60 grand versus 300 grand? Well, they're both sports cars, supercars. They do about the same thing, but it's how you get there, right? And it's in the details. And so the same thing, a $600 AR to a $2,000, there's huge difference. But now, I think, honestly, in my mind, most of the stuff from the 2,000 to the 4,000 is marketing.
Right.
You know, like, honestly, you'll get way better service out of the $2,000 AR companies than you will out of the $4,000 HK. Like, HK, once you buy the rifle, they don't give a shit about you. Try to get parts out of HK. It's like, it just is. It's like pulling teeth.
At least they have cheap mags, right? That's a joke.
Yeah, they're gold plated. Make it a platinum. But we've talked to agencies in Germany that have bought HK rifles, and they thought, well, they're a German company. We bought HK, and then they can't get parts. It's like we have half our rifles are down because HK won't respond to us because, you know, we're too small because we're only a 20-person, you know, agency. And so we can't get parts for our guns. I'm like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, there's all these things, but there's so many cool things if we can get a simplified system. I mean, even the short-barreled handguns. I mean, there's so many cool handguns. If we're not limited to, like, 4.25, like, you know, that there's so many 104-millimeter handguns.
Dude, preaching to the choir, I hope we can get short barrel handguns. I love little short handguns. This is my favorite thing.
Yeah. I've been buying short handguns from people, like little old ladies coming into the shooting edge. Like, I don't want to see a gun. I never want to see a gun get destroyed. So I'd say, yeah. I can't give it tons. I'll give it $200 for it. Cause it's that, or she's going to turn it in for destruction. It's like, she jumps up and down joy. So I have like 8 Walther PPKs. So we used to hold, I've got probably one of the best collections of short barreled handguns. So if they bring them back, those guns, I'm going to have a lot of consignment guns going out there.
So you're the guy I got it. So I have my business license. I don't know if you know, I have my film armorer's license. So I can own all the things. I haven't bothered with the business storage here. Operate out of out of another place here, but I have been tempted to put that business license to personal use for purely my own entertainment. But the Walther,
I have a sea container full of guns.
Oh, okay.
That are on the business license.
Okay.
You know, like, oh yeah. And the thing is too, is the CFO came in and looked at that, and she's just like, "This is cool."
the Alberta CFO. You guys have a cool CFO. Yeah. Like,
we have the best CFO, but we call, so my sea container is called the library, like, because we have it, like, we call it the library because it's that exactly, we use it. Like, we buy all kinds of guns now because we want to see how they work. Like, we want to design better guns. And so we had to buy current ones. Well, how did they do this? And how did they achieve that? Cause you know, like you got to buy one. You got to take it apart and shoot it and go, well, is that really an advancement? It may be different. But is that different good, right? It just may be different, right? And some people do things different just because they needed some shtick to make it sound like it was better, but it really isn't. So we're trying. You know, we have to buy a gun and then beat it up. And I'll be honest. Like, my biggest disappointments are always when we buy a BNT rifle. Because you pay a small fortune for them. And we got that 9mm, the GMB, whatever
GMH it is. GMH9?
Yeah, GMH9. And so I sent Mike, I paid for the rifle. We bought it from Red Deer Shooting Center. And Mike was going back. He is going, I go pick up that rifle. And he goes, picks it up for me because he's going to Edmonton. He comes back and he gets it. He's laughing, standing there and says, "Oh, I want you to open it." I said, "Okay, no, I want to watch when you open it." And he's standing there like, I open this and I'm like, "The fuck? I paid $3,000 for this. It's extrusion. The plastic still has nubs on it." Literally, because I manufacture, I'm like, "This is a $600 rifle. It should be retailing for like $1,200."
Right.
The Swiss.
And it was $3,000. I was just like, and it's like, it's a reciprocating bolt. So it's like, everything is cheap on it.
Yep.
Everything's cheap on it. Like, the plastic folding stock is horrible. Even the mold still had mold marks. I'm like, you couldn't even clean them up.
Clean the flashing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, I was so angry at myself. I'm like, why did I buy this?
But yeah. Yeah, it's an opportunity for you as a manufacturer to make something better, which I appreciate. You know,
and I think so. Like, we could have gone, like, we were looking for the R9 to switch it from billet to extrusion. And I thought, you know, to be quite honest, my little bit is like, getting things made in Turkey, it's pretty reasonable. So why go to extrusion?
Right.
Except for like the handguards and stuff, because I can make it out of billet, so it's a better gun.
Yep.
Right, for the price. So I'm pretty happy with that. I'm happy with that choice. So it's a beefier gun. Like the R9, when you handle it, it's a chunky gun. It's not light. I mean, it's not heavy, but it's not as light as the other PCCs. But I think that's also, I want it to be, I don't mind heavier, right? Because the gun will take a beating. You start going light, that's when you have warping issues, you have recoil issues, like, you just, and it's also like, even felt recoil issues.
Yeah, one thing I like, no way to do it. You got a pound and a half bolt, which is like what you should have for a 9mm. If you go too light on that bolt, you get that it'll be ripping those cases out of there at like Mach 5. It's just too much. So you need the weight of the bolt. If you're going to have a pound and a half bolt winging around inside there, you're going to need everything else to support it and manage the recoil on it with a spring. And now you want to have, your trigger and just like all this other stuff that's going to need to be flexible. So it's just not a good idea to get them too light. I agree.
Yeah. These balances on everything. B&T's got an amazing lineup. Like when you look at their military law enforcement lineup, like, they're a brand I want to hate, but I can't. Right. I got a history with them. That's why. But they do put up some cool shit.
I think the coolest thing right now though is the R9. I think the coolest thing you've got right now that we've got is the R9. And
for a black rifle.
For a black rifle. Yeah, and also
that's all we got.
What's the price point right now?
$1,600.
It'll be $1,650.
Yeah, there's nothing else, folks. That's it. And even after, that's still gonna be a good deal. I'm definitely gonna own one. I went and shot one last week because I was curious, finally.
Oh good.
Yeah.
So. It's a pretty smooth. It kicks that brass out. Like
it does.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it does. And the trigger's definitely heavy too. That was definitely a critique I noted. The one that I shot had seen a lot of rounds, but I dug it.
We're looking at changing the trigger spring because we were using a 9mm spring for it. Because to hold the pins in, they've had a spring to put a lot of pressure on the pins. Well, we've switched to anti-lock pins that we're putting in. So we don't need that. So we're experimenting. The guys, we've experimented with using an Air 15 hammer spring because we don't need this other one. And we've gotten it down to about 7.5 pounds. Tristan's been working on it. He's got his down to like 4 pounds. So we're looking at how can we do this? So we know that's for us. We're playing with it, but I think once more get out there, other people will play with it. Just like our barrels, like we published on the website the barrel specs. So if somebody wants to spin up their own barrel, they just go to the Sterling Arms website, go to the specs page, and there's barrel specs. Like they can pull the step file down, program their machine, and turn out a barrel. Like we're not a barrel company.
No.
So here's the barrel in the chamber if you want to make your own barrel. Right.
Quick question about that trigger spring thing you were just talking about. Can I change the hammer spring on mine to an AR because I have five AR hammer springs over here. I can change that.
Do it. Try it.
Oh, I'm gonna
do it.
Not on air.
Do you have
not on video?
Did yours come with the anti-lock pins? Or does it have just the push pins?
Just the push pins.
So will the R9 not take like a cartridge style trigger?
No, the hammer is thinner and the channel inside the bolt is thinner.
It's the crush height because our bolt is too long. So I spent a lot of time with Trigger Tech, and because we've come up, we could take their FX9 hammer, like their cartridge, and if we modified the hammer a bit, we could make it work. But that's us modifying the hammer. Right? So if you look at the trigger, if you look at your pins, are they is there screws on either side or
no? They're not anti-walk ones. They're just push.
Okay, but just if you change it to anti-walk, because the problem is the moment you take that spring,
I have anti-walk.
It's a standard air width anti-walk.
Okay, I got that.
So you can swap it out, because remember, as long as you don't mess with the sear. The sear and hammer face. Like when people start messing with that, it's like now you're asking for trouble. Like they want to get it lighter or whatever. Like that's the place not touch.
No, like, don't mess with that.
Mm-mm. No. But you get people doing that all the time. Like your army guys, they would say, oh, you know, they get for a SIFSOC, they'd start playing with that. I'm like, ooh, as if you get caught having touched that, like you walk yourself directly to jail. I'm not standing in their way.
Yep.
But the springs, you'll make absolutely, it's no, it makes no safety issues at all to try changing the springs.
Cool.
Yeah. So first thing you do is just change the spring.
I'll try and then that.
Are you guys, you had mentioned, like, are you guys going to hold off on coming out with restricted barrels until after we see some potential change in the government? Is that kind of the plan?
Yeah. So the day after an election, if it's a conservative majority,
yeah,
I will send a sample into the RCMP for my FRT.
Excellent.
So,
okay.
So,
great.
So we want to get the restricted, we want to get an FRT.
Yeah.
So we can bring in restrictives.
Right.
Because right now you don't need an FRT unless it's restricted.
Right.
Right. Because you have to register it. The only way to register it is with an FRT.
Right. Oh, so, but I thought that FRT was only a guy. I'm sorry. I won't go off into that. I apologize. I won't do it.
I get it. But, the FRT program really bugs me.
I wanted to know, is there a world where you guys will eventually potentially be selling like uppers individual from guns? Because like I could see myself owning both, right? Like own the non-restricted and then, you know, have a shorty when I want a shorty or vice versa. You know, that's kind of where my head is at.
We'll sell separate.
Awesome.
Uppers. Yeah. And they're going to be reasonably priced. I mean, but it's still chunky, but we'll do that. And we're going to set up Target Sports and in Calgary. We'll have a couple of dealers that will have all the parts as well.
Awesome.
So that way it's easy to track parts down. The whole point is we want to make Sterling the easy brands to buy because, I can get parts for it. It's reasonably priced. It's supported. They've got good, you know, good warranty that I don't need. Just make it simple. Like,
yeah, you want to be the Canadian gun company. I like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's other choices, but really, Dylan has the best customer service on the planet.
It's true.
So why would you buy anybody else's press? Right. So that's just the way it is. We're trying like, and then I think there's gonna be a lot of innovation because the other manufacturers, are doing the same thing. They're trying to pivot. Like I'd love to see, like, I hope BCL, like, I'm glad they still got bolt rifles because they've come up with some cool stuff.
Yep.
And we'll see what the other guys do. I think, if we can get the conservative government in, I think the straight pulls are dead.
Yep.
As they should be.
yeah. Straight in the garbage. Yeah. We'll...
I think Maple Ridge Armory's made a good gun, like a good kit.
Yeah. No, I do too.
But the straight pulls, like, it just sucks, you know?
Yeah.
Cause we were looking at when the bands came, like, do we make a mechanical release? Do we look at it? Cause we had a pump gun designed. We have a straight pull. We're using an actuation on the handguard. Like, we have all this. And I said, we're too close to elections. Like, we're going to plow through and figure something out. But I don't want to come up with weird guns to try to appease the liberals because it won't appease them.
No, they're like Trump in their own realm. As we've seen this week, they are the same thing. They will flip flop in a heartbeat, and there is no appeasing them.
I mean, Chrystia Freeland is starting to talk about free markets and freedom of choice. I mean, I look at this. Carney handpicks what reporters are allowed into his scrums now, but the Liberal Party is complaining because Donald Trump kicked out one reporter from the press room. One reporter, but you need to get special permission to get, like, in advance to get into a Carney press release.
I'm becoming well known for my favorite word, hypocrisy. that name art Liberal Party. But I think that there is a real bright future. I feel like this last little bit really has kind of felt like the, you know, it being darkest before the dawn sort of situation. Even just seeing, you know, we're seeing a little bit of rebound in the polls that we were told, oh no, the polls, like, the liberals are going to be in power again. Everybody needs to be afraid. And like, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. And,
like,
and
we had to expect that, but the more Carney talks,
yep.
And people get to know him, they go,
Yeah.
He's lying about it. He doesn't need to lie about it. So I'm reading his book right now. And I got to tell you, I'm not a dumb guy. Like, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Maybe the room right now I am, because I'm the only one here. But I'm usually not the smartest guy in the room. But I think I started my education with aeronautical engineering technologies. So I can plow through this shit. And the first, my wife was laughing. She's killing herself watching me try to read this book, because the first 45 pages took me a day and a half. It is so hard. I feel like I've just earned my master's in economics. Like, Carl goes in, the first two pages of this book is talking about his humility. And if you have to write about your humility, you ain't humble.
Yeah.
So you get past the hypocrisy of the humility pages. Then you get into the history of economics. And this guy starts off at Plato. He talks about the philosophies of how back then and Aristotle, how they valued things. They go through it. And then he starts going in and he says, well, you know, this makes reference to this philosophy. And he puts a French word or a Latin phrase, but he doesn't clarify it or translate it. So there I am with my fucking phone reading the book. And then my wife's going, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out. So I'd have to Google the phrase, translate it, and then go, okay, what does that refer to? And then go to Wikipedia and read the two pages on what that philosophy means, and then try to put this in context between what Carney's writing. So the best thing I can say is Carney's, as I got from the first pages, is that the course you had to take but didn't want to take by the professor who shouldn't be teaching but is teaching, and you have to use his textbook, and that's the only reason he got published is because he's a teacher, because otherwise he'd never get published because he's really not that good. That's Carney. As I got further on, I've realized that Carney wants to be a Rockefeller. That's what he wants. His end goal is to be, and have his family legacy to be one of those elite 20 families in the world that really have the most influence on everything that happens. Like, I don't want to, you know, like, but he wants to be at that level, and he sees it, and he sees that bell, and he wants to ring it. And that's what his book is about. He's the smartest guy in the room. He's our Messiah, right? And he's going to get us there. But do as I say, not as I do, because I want to sell coal over here, but shut down your coal. I want pipelines over here, but I'm going to shut down your pipelines because I want to make the billions. You can't.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that thing is, and you can see him, like you read through it, and that's what I'm getting is that he's a narcissistic ass. Who thinks he's the smartest guy, one of the smartest people on the planet, and that we should be bowing to his excellence.
JR, we need to hang out. I feel like I need a longer hangout and chat session with you. I really do.
Okay. Anytime.
I'll make note. You're Calgary based?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to pop in at some point.
Where are you based out of?
Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I've got some friends in Calgary. I make my way out to Alberta every once in a while. But yeah,
my wife's family's in just outside of Comox, so I get to the island and I get over to the mainland, to Vancouver.
I get the feels we need to hang out and have a longer form chat that's not broadcast to the world.
100%. I try to swear to the minimum. We keep my swearing to the minimum tonight. So
yeah, that's me every night.
Yeah, we let a couple fly every once in a while. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I guess we could keep going on here, but JR, where can people find out more about you, and where can they buy stuff from your company?
Well, sterlingarms.com is the website where you can find the information about it. If you go on there, the dealer network's listed there with the little map. We have to pay $10 a month to Google, but it works pretty good. We're getting more and more dealers all the time. It's been a tough slog to get dealers to carry our rifles. But now being the last kid standing, all of a sudden dealers are like, huh, what? So, we have about 20 legacy dealers. So, I mean, right now there's all sold out from the last batches, like where, you know, guns, we got them, but we'll get them more probably within 2 to 3 weeks. Like, we're now waiting for parts from different places. Cause we don't just get a gun from Turkey that we rebrand.
Right.
And for one thing, like, I like the Turks a lot, but what they don't do well is quality control. Like, they just don't. They're not there yet. and I'm not saying they're not going to get there. But I mean, remember in the 70s, you bought a Toyota because it was cheap. Now you buy it because it holds its value. Same thing. The Turks are in that. I think they're in the upswing. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of parts and then we put the things together because then we can control that process and we have our own quality checks. And I think it's worked out better for us because if we just bought guns and rebranded them, for one thing, it wouldn't be a Sterling. Like we couldn't, if we had no input in the thing. But I don't want to wreck the reputation we have that you don't need your warranty. Like you shouldn't need it. There should be no more than a 1.5 to 2% phone call rate for warranty. And most things we can deal with over the phone. Especially this rifle, there's way less to it than our R18s. So that's the good thing. And so people can go to the website, they can find the dealer network, get all the dealers. We tell our dealers they're not allowed to take money in advance. There's no pre-sales. No pre-sales. We catch you pre-selling, you get cut off, period. Good. There's nothing worse than K-Market. I freaking hate that, right? Take names, that's great. I mean, when we tell you, like the soft rule is that when we tell you we're a week from shipping your guns, if you want to take small deposits, like $50 at that point to make people really commit to it for you, that's fine. But we don't want any phone calls from people saying, yeah, I gave this dealer like $500 deposit or I paid for it. Where's my rifle?
Right.
Right. We don't want that. I never want to have those phone calls. So our dealers know not to do that. We're not making them pay in advance, right? It's not like some other guns on the market that dealers have to pay months in advance. So they're going to get deposits. This is how it works. We're not doing that. And so if I'm not charging dealers in advance, they can't charge the customers in advance. So I think it keeps everybody honest. You know, guns will come in and be sold when they come in and they get sold, right? It keeps us all keeps the market fresh and keeps it reasonable because nowhere else in the world would people put up with that shit.
Only here.
Like now American companies beta test on their clients all the time. Like people say that only Canadian companies do it. Like SIG and their cross rifles. Come on. Like did they even shoot that thing before they started selling them? Like they've had more recalls and modifications to these to their rifles. Like so it happens lots in the US market too. I mean shit, we had a whole batch of rifles come in from an American manufacturer, the 102s, it didn't work because they tested them by putting the barrels in a tube. The problem right. is it would itself pressurize the rifle and it worked. If you fired it out of there, it wouldn't work because it was under pressure. Because the gas holes were all too small. So these are the things. Like we test ours, like we built a small shooting bay at Sterling. So we test them in the open air because they have to be able to test them that way so we don't have the same problem. You know, so I've learned these things over years. You know, it was more expensive to set that up, but now we have a little test bay and we can go shoot. It's great. And we get suppliers, they can actually test the product.
Right? Nice.
But that's the thing. So I think there's lots of places where people are going to find these. We're going to support them with parts. I mean, we're working right now on machines for Cold Hammer Forge barrels. You know, like that's, you know, like we want to be the first guys to be able to offer Cold Hammer Forge barrels to the commercial public. And they won't be chrome lined. That ain't happening. So
cool.
You know, we've had people at Winter Brutality say, well, just chrome lined. It's like what, for your tracers? Like, you know, but I do love Cold Hammer Forge barrels.
Got it. Cool. Okay. Well, definitely people check out Sterling Arms and hope to see some great things coming up.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on the show, JR.
Hey, thanks for having me on there, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thanks, JR, for coming on and telling us what you got going on. A little bit of the IWA show and the R9. It's good to see. It's really good to see a Canadian manufacturer actually thriving and putting out good stuff.
They've got plans for the future. I love that so much.
Yeah. You know, maybe Canadian gun manufacturing is starting to make the turn back to what it used to be known for.
I believe it. I also believe that, like, you know, with the advent of right now, obviously the 3D printing thing, eventually it's going to be 3D printing of metal stuff. I think gun control goes away in a decade, whether we like it or not. I don't know, man.
I hope you're right, but
I think gun control becomes infinitely harder to enforce a decade from now without some real egregious monitoring on a personal computer level that most people shouldn't want in their lives. So I truly do believe if we survive this round, we win. I actually do believe that. Hmm. But I could be wrong.
I hope you're right.
I could be wrong.
I think all the strife with the U.S. is probably a good thing right now, because it's getting people who would normally be like rabidly anti-gun to be rabidly pro-gun. Yeah.
The idea that like Russia is looking at us from one end and the U.S. is looking at us from the other end, and people are like, well, what are we going to do? The guys that were going to protect us that had all the guns, they're looking at coming over the border too. And it's like, yeah, then maybe a civil defense wouldn't be a bad idea. Like, we'd still last all of 6 seconds, but, you know, especially with me, you know, aiming the wrong direction behind the line. But I'm kidding.
Are you referring to that that Call of Duty cover? No. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That was the joke. But no, like, legitimately, I do think it is good for us seeing. Like, honestly, seeing some of these people who have been just like viciously against us for so long, all of a sudden saying some of the stuff that they're saying, as far as we need to train people and we need a civil defense force. Really? Yeah. So I don't know. I'm okay with it. I don't think that any of the struggle we have with our, you know, down south neighbor will last long as people are afraid it will. So.
Yeah.
Just long enough for good things.
Oh, what's good?
I'm sharing the meme. Out of my quick scope.
I love internet meme culture too. Thank you for that.
Well, let's get into listener feedback. And we do have an email this week. It says, Israel, why don't you take this? Because we got some YouTube to go through too.
You got it. Good evening, Slamfire, Adriel, and Kyle. I'm looking at getting a 3D printer for doing some accessories. I'd greatly appreciate your thoughts and suggestions as to what I should get for my first 3D printer. Thanks, Josh. I think it depends on what material you got to use. Can you use PETG, PLA, or you got to use something fancy? If you got to use something fancy like ASA or ABS or something like that, you'll need something that's got a heated enclosure.
Yeah.
If you don't...
I think budget... First and foremost.
Yeah, how much you got to spend on it? Because you could spend $200. You could spend $1,000.
Yeah.
I love that he asked, you know, you two and not the guy that's got literally a fleet of 3D printers down.
You don't talk as much about it.
I don't. It's true.
Okay, Dustin, what would you recommend here?
You guys hit it. What's your budget?
What's your like $200-$300 one? What's your $1,000 one?
Honestly, my favorite workhorse printer for a long time has been a Creality CR10. We've got a couple of them downstairs, and they are a workhorse machine. They're not the greatest thing in the world. They're, you know, kind of middle of the road. You get like a CR10 V2 or V3 for, you know, $300-$400, and you know, it can do PLA, it can do PETG, you can do TPU. If you're looking for something that, you know, you're gonna do heated enclosure stuff, then yeah, you're gonna spend some money. But if you're just printing out like accessories, like all of my favorite $3,000 accessories that I've made for my cheap and cheerful, you know, belts have all been cranked out on the CR10s. So yeah.
Adriel, your picks?
Just know that they're uneducated, but I have a V3 SE, which is like the cheapest one you can get. And I crank out all kinds of things on it. It doesn't change filaments. It's not very fast, but it doesn't matter. You're just printing something. It's going to take twice as long. I don't really care. Who cares?
Yeah.
The nice thing about it, and that really this is a testament to 3D printers today, is that they're easier to use. They self-calibrate on more things, and there's less dicking around with them. The original ones when they came out were like a nightmare with how much calibration and messing around and tuning you had to do. And these days, they're a lot better at just doing that on their own.
Yeah. So my two, my cheap versus upper budget, and it's just because I have experience with them. Cheap, I'm an Ender 3.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you can get the auto leveling with them or just the manual, but the manual still isn't bad. Like, it'll run through its thing and you just adjust it, click OK, it'll go to the next point. You could get lots of upgrades for that, like direct extrusion, so you're driving right at the your hot nozzle instead of trying to push it up the tube to your nozzle. Some upgrades there. Upper end, the bamboo. Like, I got what is it? It's the P1S, and like, if that one will just have you covered for everything. You can do your ABS, PETG, ASA. It even does the flexible stuff as well. The TPU.
TPU.
Yeah. So, I mean, you still got to be careful with the TPU, but I mean, I've done it with the TPU. And so for its price and ease of use, but I don't have the experience like Dustin has with the Crealities and.
No, and you're all that. You're 100% right. That is a good pick, especially for something with an enclosure. Go nuts. It also, just buy once, cry once with a 3D printer right now. If you get yourself something a little bit more expensive with an enclosure with a couple of features, it's probably going to last you a few years. So that is honestly the way to go.
Maybe.
Depending on how much you're making.
Lots of people buy, like, I know more than a couple people where it's like, oh, hey, what kind do you have? I have the cheapest one you can get. How much printing have you done on it? Hundreds and hundreds of hours. How many have you done in yours? I've only printed the Bodhi, the benchy thing. That's all they've done. Or maybe they printed like the articulated dragon and that's it.
Yeah.
And they've got like $1,000 thing sitting there. So I guess the advantage with buying like a cheap one is you get to mess around with it and see if you like it. And then if you like it and you start really like Dustin, you got a business reason to be cranking stuff out. So if you get there, then, you know, you can get the bigger one. You could probably sell that old one for something or, you know, give it to a family member or something.
Yeah. Honestly, like, it doesn't matter what you buy. Put it on a marketplace. If you're not going to use it, like, somebody will buy that thing, especially if you live in a major city. Like, I've got a whole fleet downstairs and none of them owe me anything, but I have a business case. So
cool. We will get on to the YouTube comments, and first one, Gersan testing and review back, read the manual.
Did you reply to that one, Kyle?
No, I didn't.
I'll
do it. Sure. Like, hey, watch the video. Like,
No. Fuck the manual. I don't need no stinking manual.
It still gets me. Like, maybe I need to go back and rewatch that video, because was I really that bad on Gersan? No. I thought I turned around and said it was actually pretty good.
People on YouTube can't take any criticism of their gun.
That's it won't recycle, like, what was it, the 26 gram shells that no semi-auto has business cycling, but hey, I'm curious.
it is
hilarious, like, some of the comments on that video, it's awesome. Then we got a couple from Eddie, one saying, where's the video version of the podcast? I saw that, I checked on it, unfortunately it was tagged as unlisted.
Oh,
and I listed it. I published it just before the show, so it's up there, Eddie. But he did reply, do his second. So he wanted at least two per video. So he got a second one in. Says, "Wow, I knew NIJ testing was thorough, but I didn't know there was that much involved in the tests. S&J sounds like a great local Ontario store. I've bought from them online before. I'll have to drop by next time I'm out that side of the country. So, thank
Eddie,
you, Eddie.
Come up with a topic and come on the show.
Yeah.
We're doing a bunch of Canadian retailers here, but you always got so much to say. Why don't you come up to the show?
Yeah, there we go.
Come up with a topic first.
Yes.
What do you want to talk about? We want to talk about it, as long as it's to do with guns.
Yeah. Watch links. Well, we do have a list of stuff of what people bought from our Cabela's and Brownells link for December 1st to February
28th. Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay, so, Kyle. Or actually, Dustin, why don't you go through those? And then that'll give you time to pull the Brownells ones while you're doing that.
All right. So, somebody bought on, what is this? December 20th? No.
Just no,
that's
the item. Just the item.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, so somebody bought some Federal Gold Metal Sierra Match King rifle ammo. Wonderful. Bought a couple of them. Cool. And some Challenger 12 gauge high velocity target load shot shell 7.5. That's nice. Good. Oh, you bought 20 of those. Excellent. That must have been a good deal. It was only like, yeah, not bad. Somebody bought a 511 Rush 24 liter backpack in green. We support this decision.
Mm-hmm.
We got two different Tipton Ultra gun vices. These are on
good gun vice.
Yeah, there's two of them that were on different days, so presumably different people. That's kind of cool. Magnum 12 by 20 silhouette steel target. Oh, nice. Withstand. Excellent. Always good to have some steel. Everybody should have some steel to shoot at.
Yeah.
We got a Wheeler Pro Reticle leveling system. Cool. MDT Premier 34 millimeter scope rings. Good call. Those are expensive scope rings. What do we got? Alien Deluxe buttstock shell holder and accessory pouch. Nice. A Vortex Strike Eagle 3-18x44. Yeah, oh yeah, the EVR rifle scope. That's very nice. And finally, Bass Pro Shop Men's Weekend Fish logo short sleeve t-shirt. Well, we're going to be looking for you, whoever bought that. That's wonderful. And cool. Yeah, that's everybody that's bought stuff with our link, which is neat.
Awesome. Thank you, Dustin. And we do not have the Brunel stuff. There's not anything there. No one's used their link for Brunels. But if you do our ordering for Brunels, they're great for your gunsmithing tools. And there's some of the stuff, some of the gun parts they can still ship to Canada. You can go to a website and click on the link there. And yeah, we'll get a little bit of a kickback. Won't cost you anything extra. And that's an easy way to support the show, as well as the Cabela's link. We'd like to thank our supporters on Patreon and Player, and we do have a new Patreon-y. So, Alex J., your stuff is, well, it's in an envelope. The kid hasn't taken it to the mail yet.
So. Could this be the Alex J.? Do you think he listens?
Yeah. also, behind on comments here, but... if you'd like to send the show an email, you can send them to slamfireradio@gmail.com and we will read them live and get out to shoutouts.
I got one.
Cool.
To listener Mitchell, who I met in the Cabela's parking lot, like pulled up and this guy's like looking at me weird. I'm like, well, maybe a listener. So I got out and he's like, "You're Adriel, the hunting gear guy, Silas the Slamfire." It's like, ah, cool. And I didn't have a sticker or a patch for him or anything.
Oh.
I gave him nothing, but I'll give him this shout out. Thanks, Mitchell.
My shout outs to Kelly. Just sending you love. You know, rough day today.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, she's going through a rough time right now, her and her family. I guess my shout out would be preemptive. I'm going to shout out Trevor, treasurer for our club, because he's picking up the reins and he's going to run the match next weekend while I'm at Superstition. So he's going to run the meeting and run the match so that we actually still hold a match this month. So yeah, shout out to him. And with that, we are going to sign off. So go join our Discord server. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and Player. Join the CCFR, and we will see you next week. Hey.
Hey, everyone.
Good night.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.